Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast, an intelligent, imaginative, hospitable exploration of ideas that matter in contemporary life. And now, here's your host, Dick Staub.
Well, welcome everybody. This is Dick Staub. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Kindling's Muse. It's a little strange that it's kind of light outside. We're used to being in this dark space, but we're glad that you're here tonight. Tonight, our subject is Inklings 2.0. And the Inklings, for those of you that don't know, were a literary group. They were people who loved to write and read. They praised the value of narrative and fiction. They encouraged fantasy writing. They were particularly interested in kind of the literature of the northern lands. They met between the 1930s and the 1960s. Matter of fact, this is all too painful because I had a book that was released today, and the very first email I got today from someone who had just gotten their copy was that they found an error in the book. And the error was that I mentioned that C.S. Lewis died in 1963, and who can tell me what date? The same day JFK was assassinated and Aldous Huxley died. What was that date? November 22nd. And of course, my book reports that it was November 23rd. But we won't worry about that. But it was as recently as the 60s that C.S. Lewis was writing and J.R. Tolkien died in the 70s. But it gives you a little sense of the perspective that over these many, many years, the Inklings met primarily in a pub in Oxford called The Bird and the Baby. That was a nickname for it. And they had these incredible conversations about ideas that matter. From time to time, they would read their work for each other and encourage each other in the writing that they were doing. As I mentioned, notable among the Inklings were C.S. Lewis, J.R. Tolkien, Charles Williams, Owen Barfield. There were over 20 people over those years that were considered officially part of the Inklings, although Warney Lewis, who was C.S. Lewis's older brother, said of the group, properly speaking, the Inklings was neither a club nor a literary society, though it partook of the nature of both. There were no rules, officers, agendas, or formal elections. They simply met as a dynamic group, out of which grew some very deep friendships and literary output that is still influential today. So our topic tonight in the Inklings 2.0 is, could the Inklings face-to-face experience be replaced by online interaction? Can you experience a level of intentionality, depth of relationship, creative encouragement of another person online, even if you've never met that person, that could in fact replicate the Inklings experience, which was a totally in-person experience, or not? Joining us tonight are some people on the panel that are involved online in community, and we're going to talk with them, but we're also going to want to hear some of your stories. Among the people that we'd invited to be here tonight is a guy who met his wife online, and I was at their wedding 2 weeks ago, and they met online, got acquainted, actually then met face-to-face. They don't have a virtual marriage. They've actually met in person. And that kind of thing is happening more and more these days. It's a new world that we're living in. Our guests are Jennifer Zug, who is right here. She's a prolific blogger. Also, we're joined by singer-songwriter Tara Ward. And she has been in the group late Tuesday and is now branching out in a solo career. And she's going to be singing for us tonight, too. And also joining us is artist Scott Erickson of the Transpire Project. And all of them have kind of interesting experiences online, and I welcome each of you. Let's give them a big round of applause to our guests. Now we invited you for a bunch of reasons, among the fact that you're young'uns, because a lot of us that are older have not experienced the kind of online life that a lot of younger people have. If you look at things like Facebook, or MySpace, or many of the most popular community sites, they really have been originating with younger people. So I'd like to just start by talking a little bit with you about how you see community happening online, and kind of what your own online experience is. And maybe we'll start with you, Jen, because you've kind of become recently to the blogging world, but it's become kind of an important part of your life.
Yes, I started blogging 2 years ago. I think it was December of 2005. And originally, I just was sort of an online journal. And over the course of months and years, you know, the internet is hugely linkable. You can find things really easy. And I just started making connections with different people and began developing friendships with people who would leave me comments. And then, you know, you go to somebody's blog and you see all the people they link to and you recognize that they like some of the same things you like. And so then you start leaving them comments and you start exchanging emails. I just sort of developed a little community of friends through my blog.
You have a shirt on that, for people listening to the podcast can't see, that says "Stay at Home Blogger."
Yes.
What's that about?
I met a gal at I went to a blogher.org. They held a conference last July, and I met this gal, and she makes T-shirts. Babybrewing.com. I saw her wearing this T-shirt, and I just had to have one. It turns out she sells them. So,
and, but you're a mom.
I am a mom.
And you're what types of things are you dealing with on your blog?
I write about everything. I write about the funny things my kids do. I write about I had an experience of postpartum depression for almost a year. So I processed through a lot of what I was going through. In that, I had a death in the family, and I processed through a lot of that. So it kind of vacillates a lot between sort of serious laying out of very intimate things, and then, you know, things like, my daughter said the funniest thing yesterday.
This thing about sharing deeply personal things online, that's like, you know, postpartum depression is a pretty serious thing. How is it that you're comfortable talking about those things, knowing that complete strangers can happen across that site and read those things? I mean, those are the kinds of things back in the dark ages people would write in journals and nobody would know about until the person died. And then they'd read them. And it's like people today are putting their journals right out there.
Right.
What's going on with that?
I definitely think it's not for everybody. I don't encourage people to do it unless... I feel like it would be helpful. I think for me, there's something just really therapeutic of knowing that it's outside of myself. It's almost like those dreams in the movies where somebody dies and then you see them floating up and they're looking at themselves from above. You know, it's like you're able to look at yourself more in a third person context. It's more objective. If I can get the crazy outside of my head and out there where other people can know it's real, then all of a sudden it doesn't seem like it has so much of a hold on me.
Did people connect to that part of your blogging?
Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people email me and comment, very comforted knowing that they say things like, you say the things that I can't say, you know, or that I haven't been able to admit or that I haven't been able to place, but you worded it in such a way that makes sense to me.
I want to come back to that because you've actually met some of these people. But Scott, how about you? You were talking earlier about you feel like there is an openness to being vulnerable online that is different from being vulnerable in person.
Yeah, I think that I think people exude some kind of like power, let's just call it like presence, like the presence of somebody has an effect on you, whether it's welcoming or not welcoming or intimidating or, you know, friendly, whatever it can be. Like you experience that when you meet a person. And so you have that removal and then there's that big gap. So, I mean, all that's going to be there for, interacting with somebody by viewing their words is going to be, what are their words saying? And they can be mean or angry or friendly or welcoming. And so, but I think it's toned down a lot more. So I think that, at least from my own experience, is that the times that I've blogged or written something or communicated something via email to a person, I'm a lot more vulnerable. I'm a lot more willing to share because also I can like edit. I can, we were talking about how when you say things and then you go, oh, I wish I would have said that. You can do that in your email. And so then you sound really witty and intelligent, unlike on this program right now. So
it's selective vulnerability. It's edited vulnerability. It's positioning yourself vulnerability.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know...
Is that real, then? Is it Is it, are you actually meeting the person that is the person, or are you meeting the person that they want you to think they are? Which, of course, we know happens in person, too. But
sure, sure. By, you know, what we put on our bodies and makeup and hair and whatever we want to portray about ourselves, we can do that. I think we miss a certain part of a person because it would be dumb to think that you could only judge a person by what they write or what they communicate. But I think what it does allow also is that maybe those who are socially shy or, you know, it is intimidating moments, have a chance to just really, hey, this is what I want to say. This is what I would say in these situations. I'm not going to be held back by maybe how I feel about this interaction with a person, but I'm going to be able to communicate. So it gives more of an open chance for communication. Hmm. And that's great, you know. But I definitely think that it's got to go to the next level, like whoever that person who is, you know, who got married or, you know, engaged online or whatever, you know, they got to meet, but eventually had to come, hey, who are you in person? Who are you to interact with? You know, there's that whole dimension of a person that needs to be experienced physically. My wife and I, when we met each other, and like a week later, she left for Europe for 3.5 months. So when we started getting to know each other, we wrote emails for about 2 months, and then we met up in Amsterdam, because I was going to Europe too for the summer. But so we had grown, you know, talking online, it was great. But it was interesting that week when we were with each other, like, Holly's great, but, you know, she's a really good writer. But it was, you know, there
well,
was
wait
like,
a minute.
I'm like,
so why don't you write that down?
Yeah, exactly.
It was a lot better when you were writing it.
And even now when she emails me for whatever, I'm like, you're so different when you communicate online than you are in person.
Really?
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Is she here tonight?
She's not. That's
is
why I'm saying
really
all this.
Is she
going to
be really unhappy
right now?
Yeah. That you're talking about this?
I might have to pay for it later. No, yeah. She'd be fine.
She'll write you.
Yeah, she'll write me.
She's emailing you right now. She senses something's happening. Tara, how about you?
I have been using the internet for a while with the band that I was in late Tuesday. That's how we mainly communicated with fans. We have latetuesday.com, which was our main website, and then MySpace kind of happened in between that, and then we started our MySpace page. I have my own personal MySpace page, which is for music, because it's really easy to set up.
Yeah.
In fact, in some ways, it almost replaces needing your own website for some musicians.
Yeah. And you said that you had, like, in the low thousands, and Scott said you had, like, 20,000.
I don't know. We'll have to check and figure out.
Well,
I really don't know how many friends we have.
What kinds of things are your fans, how do they connect to you when you do that online?
They leave comments, or they'll email us, or we'll put up things. It is a different way to communicate with each other. We can leave gifts for one another, like free songs or ringtones or.
Now, you were talking about, before the show, about as a writer, if you think about the Inklings, that you tried to start writers' groups, like with writers in person, and people didn't show up and they got too busy. Whereas when you post something online, you almost always can get some immediate feedback. Talk about how that's different.
Yeah.
And what the implications are for this idea that would the Inklings have been able to actually do what they did in terms of encouraging their artistry online as opposed to in person? I mean, it's almost like you were saying it was better online.
Yeah, I think that in some ways it's almost more possible with how busy musicians and songwriters in general get. I was trying to start a songwriting group in college and afterwards, and a lot of people were really, really interested in it, but trying to find a time where everyone could show up was so difficult, so I would meet with two people here, two people there. But ever since, you know, I got my laptop, and I have now the ability to write something, record it, and email it out to the people that I would love to have feedback from, and I can get that feedback right away, and it's really opened the doors to.
Now, are you getting feedback from people you've never met?
Not necessarily yet. Well, I'd have to think about that.
I mean, what I'm interested in is, how do you know whether you care what they think? I mean, if you've never met them, how do you know it's like Wikipedia just had this famous case where there's this guy that's been one of their major kind of editors that had said he had a PhD from this major university and everything else. And I think he's like a 17-year-old kid kind of sitting in a basement somewhere. And so here you are, you think you're getting, you know, comments from Sting, and it's actually a third grader, you know, who says, you know, love your work, you know.
Well, at least, no, I think I know most of the people at this point, but some of them, and I could see it developing in the future where if I run across someone's music supposedly on a page and I like it and we can exchange things back and forth. Like I have met, there's one gentleman that I met in Nashville at a conference, and I really did not mingle with him at all, but he liked Late Tuesday's music and contacted us, and we were talking about having him produce us, but it never worked out. But the more, even though I didn't talk to him when he was actually in person around me, he contacted us and I listened to his stuff and I really like it, and we've been talking about having him produce an album, and I've sent him probably more music.
There's a sense in which, and we were talking about this earlier, that the web is an equalizer. When I get comments about something that I've written online, because my experience, for those of you who don't know, I did a nationally syndicated talk show. We had about 350,000 average quarter hour listeners. And a lot of people would email you. And because it was a national show, a lot of people would call toll free from all around the country. And I would recognize their voices. I would recognize who they were. I never met most of those people, but I felt a relationship with a lot of them. Now, it's a selective relationship. It's a different kind of relationship. But it's interesting. You get comments from people that are really very insightful, people you've never met, and you're basing whether you think they have insight on what they say, not on the reputation. And actually, to be quite honest with you, a lot of people that are well-known who say things, it's not that insightful. But they're used to being important. So people are used to acting like what you said really was useful, but it really isn't as useful as somebody who's not known at all. Or some of the best stuff that I read online is by people who, out of frustration, they couldn't get published, they couldn't get a show, so they just started writing, and their stuff is really interesting and provocative. So there's that. The cool thing about the web is there's this great emerging opportunity, whether it's posting a movie you made, you know, on YouTube, or whether it's posting a song that you wrote, or people posting art that they've made. There's a lot of that kind of cool stuff that's happening as a result of the web. Now, you and I had a similar experience in that we've met people who we first met online, and I was sharing the story of a guy named, he was affectionately called Orthodox Mitch. He was Antiochian Orthodox. He lived in Hobart, Indiana. He used to call my show, and he used to email me and say that he really believed I was a closet Orthodox guy because of things that I would say. And I would say I'm in the mystical tradition in terms of my spiritual journey, and he found that a connection with his orthodoxy. And his wife emailed me and asked me if I would come and surprise him at his 40th birthday party. And so I drove to Hobart, Indiana after the show one night in a rainstorm, and he'd been listening to the show, so an hour and a half later when they're in the basement of this little church, he was shocked. Of course, he didn't know what I looked like. You know, it's always a big disappointment, which is why some of us stay in radio. But it was really cool, and it was like we knew each other. And when we were moving back to Seattle, he called up and asked me to dinner, and he gave my family and I an icon of Elijah being fed by the ravens. And he said, I'm giving you this because I believe God is going to provide for you as you embark on new mission and ministry. And it's in our living room. And I've only met him 3 times in my lifetime, but I feel very close to him. And I felt close to him before I ever met him. Now, I'm kind of the guy that was going to be on the panel and say, well, virtual community is vastly inferior to personal community. And yet, as I started thinking about stories like this, I realized there is a lot that can happen virtually. Phone calls, emails, even people that aren't online. You get to know people that way. You decided that you wanted to meet some of the folks that were in online community with you, Jen, and talk about that and why that happened and why it was important.
After a while I developed, you know, just getting to know these people online, and I thought, well, gosh, this would be really fun if we could actually meet in person, because, you know, the more you get to know each other, the more you start leaving, you know, exchanging emails and comments and things. And I realized that there was quite a few of us who lived kind of in the general Puget Sound area. And so I just sort of set up a night for us to get together, and a couple people could make it. And it ended up being really an exciting experience, just getting to know those people in a more in-depth way. I think they were conversations we could have had over email, were we not able to get together. And I have some relationships like that with women who live across the country. But I think there's just something, I don't know if it's with women or what, just being together and kind of enjoying the tactile environment of it that was fun. There's a blogger named Kathy Sierra who was talking about, you know, why do people go to conferences if they can experience all of the things online, if you can get podcasts of things, if you can get other people who are there live blogging. And I think there was just really this inspiration that comes from meeting people face to face. And for me personally, it when I meet somebody online and I get to know them really well, I like feel compelled to meet them. I'm like, you need to be my friend, you know? And
you're trying to convince people to move.
I do. I have a friend who lives on the East Coast, and
yeah,
I want her to move here. And
a friend who you've
she
never
may think
met?
I'm kidding, huh?
You've never met her?
I did meet her. I actually met her before I started reading her blog, because she was at a conference I was at.
Okay.
But she, her son is a month older than my son, and we have similar experiences.
Okay, we're gonna. When we come back, I want to talk about how online community is different from personal community, and kind of what the pros and cons are. But before we take our first break, we're going to enjoy a song from singer-songwriter Tara Ward.
Song to me. No, you're not worth another song, 'cause you broke my love and you didn't explain what you were thinking. So I just blamed it on myself. So I just blamed it. So I just blamed it on myself. Why do you lie to yourself and feed your lies to everybody else? How you played the game, but you never what you were thinking. So I just blamed it on my heart. So I just blamed it. So I just blamed it on my heart.
Dick Staub will be back with more of the Kindling's Muse right after this. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to the Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.